The time is 6 o'clock. This is Radio Ghana, the news presented by Abraham Donko. In the headlines, Parliament approves 1.8 billion CD supplementary budget for 2016 and stands down approval of John Oti Bless as Deputy Minister of Amunti FM comments. Home fire safety campaign launched in Accra. UN approves more than $257 million for developing countries to implement Paris Agreement on climate change. And South Africa's ANC suffers biggest post-apartheid electoral setback. This year's supplementary estimates of government has been approved by Parliament. This means government has been given the green light to spend an additional 1.8 billion CDs to finance government's operations in the 2016 financial year. Rounding up the debate for its approval, the majority leader, Orban Bagbin, said government had a case in requesting for additional funds. He said government has proven over the period that monies allocated to them are judiciously used. The minority leader, Osechi Mensabonsu, said several promises by government have not materialized and wondered why government needed more money to spend. Parliament has approved the nominations of Emmanuel Bombandi as Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs and Regional Integration and Joseph Tetano as Deputy Minister for the Eastern Region. The House, however, stepped aside the approval of John Oti Bless as Deputy Minister of Local Government and Rural Development, pending further consultations to clear him. This follows allegations by some MPs that Mr. Oti Bless, who is MP for Nkwanta North constituency, was part of the Amunti FM saga. Though the Appointments Committee presented its report a week ago, the House took a voice vote on the approval of the three nominees only last night. The Speaker, Dodo Ajahu, said in the light of the development, Parliament will decide on the nomination of Mr. Oti Bless later. Parliament is seeking the Presidential Transition Amendment Bill 2016 through the second reading. Moving the motion for the debate on the amendment, the Attorney General and Minister of Justice, Marietta Burapiapong, said the bill, when passed, will enhance provisions in the existing act to ensure smooth transition from one democratically elected government to the other. She said the bill seeks to address loopholes in the Presidential Transition Law Act 845.
Parliament in 2012 passed the Presidential Transition Act Act 845 to serve as a guide to the transfer of power from one democratically elected administration to the other. In the implementation of the Act for the first time in 2012, some challenges were experienced. Several loopholes were identified in the transition process in 2012. Mr. Speaker, the bill, in seeking to address the loopholes identified in the Act, incorporates provisions that will ensure an effective and smooth presidential transition. The bill provides for the situation where the transition involves an incumbent president who has been re-elected as president. In that case, the number of members of the transition team is to be reduced from 22 to 13 persons. This will help limit the attendant costs relating to persons appointed to the transition team. The bill also provides for a 6-week tenure of office for the transition team, and this provides clarity on the period of transition. The bill also amends Act 845 by abridging the time for the election of Speaker before the dissolution of Parliament from 2 days to 12 hours. This is to ensure that the timing of presidential inauguration is improved upon. It will also prevent the unconstitutional situation of having two parliaments, which would have arisen as a result of the election of the Speaker 2 days before the presidential inauguration, as per the provisions of Section 11 of Act 845.
The Chairman of the Constitutional, Legal and Parliamentary Affairs Committee, Magnus Amwati, highlighted some key features of the bill for it to be taken through the second reading.
In considering the bill, we observe that the bill now makes provision at sections 11 and 12 of the Act, which deal with the issue of swearing in of members of Parliament and the election of the Speaker 2 days before the inauguration of the President, pose a challenge because of the provision in Article 113 of the Constitution. Clause 7 of the bill, however, proposes within 12 hours instead of the 2 days who have breached the time. The committee considers the 12 hours much more reasonable and urges this Honorable House to support it. Our committee is of the expectation that the passage of the Presidential Transition Amendment Bill 2016 would allow for effective implementation of the law as a way of removing the lapses experienced in the implementation of the Act, and therefore recommend to the House to adopt the report and pass the bill.
The MP for Finso South, Ben Abdalabanda, spoke about the provision in the bill that mandates the Administrator General to evict persons from government property after a change in government.
The Administrator General, per this law, is being given the capacity to evict all persons who, after the expiration of 3 months, so continue to occupy official residence of the government. The President failed to address that issue. And we all know that in every legal proceeding, capacity is very, very crucial. Where the Administrator General does not have the capacity to institute legal proceedings to evict persons who occupy official residence beyond the 3 month limitation period, Mr. Speaker, there arises a challenge. So this bill intends to cure the defect in relation to the inability of the Administrator General to evict persons who continue to occupy official residence in spite of the 3 month limitation period.
That was the MP for Ofinso South, Ben Abdalabanda. He was speaking on the floor of Parliament during the second reading of the Presidential Transition Amendment Bill 2016. A research fellow at IDEC, Kwesi Jonah, is not surprised the PPP settled for a woman to run alongside Dr. Papakwesi Ndum in the 2016 election. Speaking on Behind the News, Mr. Jonah said it does not matter whether the candidate is a mainstream politician. The important thing is what the person is bringing on board.
It didn't come as a surprise to me at all, because it's not only the fact that even last election he had Ms. Ivaloko as a running mate, but if you look at the party itself, women play a very important role in the PPP, the vice chair, at the level, women play very, very important roles within the party. So it didn't come as a surprise. I knew that for a party that has already given very significant roles to women within its ranks, it's not very surprising if they had a woman running mate.
Has she got the following and the appeal that was attract votes or voters?
But the truth of the matter is that if you choose somebody who is not already a member of the party, then that person doesn't have the contact, the basic support within the party. It is now that she's going to build her relationship with the members of the party, and sometimes some sections of the party even become peeved that in spite of the fact that they have rendered years of service to the party, somebody should come from outside to become the running mate. That is a very real factor that both Bridget and Dr. Ndum will have to deal with.
The research fellow at IDEG, Kwesi Jonah. The moderator of the Global Evangelical Church, Right Reverend Seto Wufori, has called for a single national development plan which all political parties must implement when in power. He is of the firm conviction that this will be the foundation for collective governance and accountability. Right Reverend Dr. Ofori urged political parties to remain committed and contribute towards achieving this for the development of the nation. He was speaking at the opening of the 2016 Synod of the Global Evangelical Church in Accra. Rosalind Ganyaglo reports.
The Synod is the highest decision-making body of the Global Evangelical Church. This year's meeting is being attended by all presbyteries, both home and abroad. Right Reverend Dr. Seto Wufori said the church upholds democracy. Therefore, as the electioneering approaches, Ghanaians must pursue peace for the development of the nation.
The Global Evangelical Church is thankful to God for seeing the country through the challenging period of the past year. The power and energy crisis, labor unrest, health threats, flag is active, and an unstable currency, among others, really shook the nation into the ground. You must be grateful that God has spared us from the present development, which has set the clock of progress back for some neighboring West African countries. While we prepare for a major political election this year as a nation, we must also prepare a clear roadmap for national development. No single political party's manifesto can fulfill Ghana's dream of becoming a great and prosperous nation. We wish, therefore, to appeal to all political parties to contribute to the drawing of a single credible national development plan for the parties called Ghana.
Right Reverend Dr. Ofori said the church remains committed to achieving its mission and vision. It has therefore re-strategized to improve evangelism. He touched on the theme of the synod.
The theme for this year's synod is that kingdom come, living the kingdom life. The theme is the call to action, a call to do the will of God as citizens of the kingdom. You would agree with me that knowing all about the kingdom is not enough. Living in it is the best. As Christians, this is a constant reminder for us to live in the realities of the kingdom, that our lives must portray heaven on earth. It is the desire and prayer of the global evangelical church that the kingdom be established in the nations, in families, in homes, in the heart of individuals, so that lives will be transformed to make our country Ghana a better place for all to the glory of God.
The Minister for the Interior, Prosper Bani, assured the church, and for that matter Ghanaians, that this year's election will be peaceful.
I want to partner with the church to make sure that our people all have this confidence, and that when 7th December comes, we just go and vote and go home. The police will be present, that I show you, to protect the system and the citizens from any abuse from any group or individual.
The synod ends on Sunday, the 7th of August.
Rosalind Ganaglo reporting. The Minister of Food and Agriculture, Mohamed Limuna Muniru, says government will welcome opportunities aimed at enhancing inclusive private sector investment in the agricultural sector. In view of this, it will continue to create an enabling environment to ensure the growth of the private sector. Mr. Muniru said this in a message at the annual report on the new Alliance Cooperative Framework Agreement in Accra, a report by Rita Nyako.
The New Alliance and Growth Africa is a five-year development plan that was instituted in 2012. It is aimed at promoting and ensuring food security and nutrition in Africa. It is also to identify the key challenges that private investors face and make recommendations on the actions that government and development partners need to undertake in addressing them. The program is being funded by the G7 countries and other donor partners. Mr. Muniru said, government sees the new Alliance and Africa Growth Initiative as a good investment model for inclusive and strategic partnership among governments, donors, and the private sector. He said the initiative is an opportunity to enhance the focus and level of investment and accelerate the implementation of a national agri-investment plan.
One of the key objectives of this government is attract private investment to the agriculture sector. Therefore, government welcomes such opportunities aimed at enhancing inclusive private sector investments in the agriculture sector. We see the new alliance as a good investment model for inclusion and strategic partnerships among government, donors, and the private sector. It has been recognized that international assistance alone cannot fulfill our shared objectives, which is even more pressing now as Africa's role is expanding in the global economy. The private sector is therefore a significant partner in this tripartite arrangement in the alliance.
The Deputy Director for Economic Growth, USAID Ghana, Brian Coughlin, said the meeting was to verify the status of progress in meeting the new Alliance and Growth Africa commitments.
Rita Nyako reporting. This news comes to you from Radio Ghana Accra, the major stories. Parliament approves 1.8 billion cedi supplementary budget for 2016 and stands down approval of John Oti Bless as Deputy Minister over Munti FM comments. Home Fire Safety Campaign launched in Accra. UN approves more than $257 million for developing countries to implement Paris Agreement on climate change. And South Africa's ANC suffers biggest post-apartheid electoral setback. The wife of the Vice President, Mrs. Matilde Misa-Arthur, has reiterated the need for adequate sensitization to the cause of fire. She noted that fire safety is a shared responsibility and urged the public to partner the Ghana National Fire Service to ensure safety. Mrs. Misa-Arthur made the point at the launch of the Home Fire Safety Campaign in Accra. She charged the service to design appropriate educational messages to be disseminated to the public that she said will make the project successful and yield the desired result of reducing domestic fires in the country. Jessica Siedu has the rest of the story.
The campaign is to sensitize homeowners and other individuals to the need to adopt and put in place fire safety measures in their homes. It is also to create and sustain awareness of the hazards of fire. The Chief Fire Officer, Dr. Albert Brown-Gazy, said statistics indicate that domestic fires was the highest on the list of fires recorded in the country. He noted that the recent burning to death of some citizens in their homes brings to the fore the urgent need to embark on the campaign to minimize the incidence of domestic fires. The wife of the Vice President, Mrs. Matilda Emisa-Arthur, commended the fire service for bringing up the initiative. According to her, domestic fires do not only destabilize the family, but puts women, children and the aged who are the most vulnerable at risk. Mrs. Emisa-Arthur therefore called on the citizenry to take fire safety and prevention seriously and build a better nation.
I'm happy that the Ghana National Fire Service is launching the Home Fire Safety Campaign. I see this as not only appropriate, but also very important, since the public will have the needed knowledge to avoid home fires, if associated death, and the loss of heart and property. When fires occur, they lead in their wake poverty to families, society, and the nation at large. Therefore, measures must be put in place to ensure that preventable home fires are nipped in the bud, to avoid the unnecessary loss of life, property, injury, and agony to the family that endure through fire and being in the home. The time has therefore come for all of us to take fire safety and prevention serious so that we can build a better nation for ourselves.
The Ministry of Interior pledged its total commitment and support to the Ghana National Fire Service.
Jessica Siedu filed that report. The Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, says 25 flexible plastic bag manufacturing companies within Accra and Tema now include biodegradable additives to their productions. In an interview with Radio Ghana, a chief program officer of the EPA, Goodson Voido, said this came to light when the agency carried out a survey 3 months ago to ascertain compliance with a directive to make plastics biodegradable. Joyce Jechi has more.
Plastic has become the most common material since the beginning of the 20th century, and modern life is unthinkable without it. Unfortunately, what makes it so useful is its durability, lightweight, and low cost, which also makes it problematic when it comes to its end-of-life phase due to its non-biodegradable nature. Ghana is not different from other African countries when it comes to problems associated with plastic waste. It constitutes the biggest challenge to solid waste management, threats to wildlife, and the pollutant of groundwater. November last year was supposed to have been the deadline for manufacturers of flexible plastic bags to include biodegradable additives in the manufacturing of their products. A survey at the beginning of the year indicated that most manufacturers had imported the additives but were not using them. The story is now changing, according to the Chief Program Officer of the EPA, Goodson Voido.
This exercise was carried out in Accra and Tema, and was realized that about 25 of them that are producing flexible plastics in Ghana have started incorporating the additives. We took samples of all that they are producing, and then the sample of even the additive that they are using, and a sample of the flexible plastic, which we are taking for analysis. In the area of the equipment, EPA has the equipment in our lab that we are just about testing for the presence of the additives in the plastic that they are producing.
Mr. Voido said, what to enable the agency to conduct effective market sampling of flexible plastic bags is a handheld machine, which unfortunately the agency is yet to purchase.
Joyce Jetcher reporting. The Australian High Commissioner in Accra, Andrew Barnes, has renewed his country's commitment to help improve sanitation and hygiene in Ghana. He said issues involving sanitation, especially at the local level, is high on his country's agenda for Africa, adding that every effort must be made to promote that cause. Mr. Barnes made the commitment at the launch of a report on a 5-year sanitation project in Accra. We'll bring you my report. The project, which formed part of the Australian African Community Engagement Scheme, was implemented by WaterAid Ghana in partnership with beneficial communities. It helped to increase provision of water, access to sanitation, as well as educate such communities on sanitation and related issues. Speaking to Radio Ghana, the country director of WaterAid Ghana, Dr. Ifia Zakia, said the project achieved its aim of enhancing good sanitation practices in the communities. Explaining further, she noted that because of the huge community participation, the project can be sustained.
The Australian African Community Engagement Scheme was a 5-year program that supported water sanitation and hygiene programs here in Ghana. It was led by WaterAid Ghana, but we worked, of course, in partnerships with the communities in 5 districts. We also work with 4 local partners, and we were a part, actually, of a group that was of 10 INGOs across Africa that were involved in a collaborative partnership to improve the lives of different communities throughout Africa.
The Australian High Commissioner to Ghana, Andrew Barnes, who could not hide his joy, told Radio Ghana that the project was part of its plans to strengthen bilateral relations. He gave the assurance that his country will provide support to Ghana in some other areas, such as education and industry.
From the stories we've heard from the people, the Australian government sees the best way to help Ghana is not through aid and development assistance, but through helping Ghana improve its economy. And we have a lot of Australian companies involved working here in the mining sector particularly, where they work closely with communities to help develop the skill base on the communities. It has certainly been life-transforming projects. It's really made a huge difference to the lives and welfare of the women and children, girls, going to school, their ability to participate in school. One of the great things about this project is that it delivers safe drinking water and also improves the sanitation of local communities.
According to WaterAid Ghana, the Canadian government has expressed interest to sponsor some projects to bring to fruition its new country strategy. The Green Climate Fund of the UN has approved more than $257 million to help developing countries implement the Paris Agreement on climate change, to enable government institutions and civil society organizations to meet the criteria for funding. A training program has taken place in Accra for them on writing good proposals to source for the funds. Joyce Deche reports.
The Green Climate Fund, GCF, of the UN is to ensure that developing countries take ownership of climate change funding and integrate it within national action plans. It is in fulfillment of this that a training program has been held in Accra for the public and private sector institutions and CBOs on how to write acceptable proposals, know the accredited institution that screens their document, to enable themselves for the funds. The Minister of Environment, Science, Technology and Innovation, Mahama Yariga, said effective collaboration is key to addressing climate issues. He said the country will need $16.3 billion to successfully implement the intended National Determined Contributions, INDCs. Mahama Yariga talked about the DCF.
The fund will adopt a country-driven approach and strengthen programs which is coherent and have stakeholder coordination at the national level. The statement from the GCF indicated that the board had approved its first funding proposals for 2016, totaling US$256.6 million in GCF funding.
The head of the climate change program, also at the ministry, Peter Derry, talks about the country's mitigation and adaptation actions in the INDCs.
There are programs and activities that the president submitted to the Conference of Parties, that these are the things we are going to do to ensure that we will reduce greenhouse gases in our country, to ensure that our country becomes resilient to the difficulties of climate change.
The country has put forward 20 mitigation and 11 adaptation actions in its NDCs for implementation from 2020 to 2030.
Joyce Jetche reporting. South Africa's governing ANC appears to be facing its biggest electoral setback since the end of apartheid after the partial results of municipal elections. With 85% of the votes in, the ANC trails its main rival, the Democratic Alliance, in the cities of Port Elizabeth and Cape Town. The two parties are in close fight in Johannesburg and Pretoria, but the ANC is still in the lead nationally. The military in Egypt says it has killed the head of the Sinai branch of the so-called Islamic State, along with dozens of its fighters. It said Abu Dua al Ansari was killed in a series of airstrikes on fighters of the Sinai province or Ansar Beit al Maqdis group. The airstrikes targeted jihadist strongholds near the town of El Arish. Sinai province is Egypt's most active insurgent area and has been linked to deadly attacks in Sinai and Cairo. Now to other news, the main points again. Parliament has approved 1.8 billion CDs as supplementary budget for 2016. This means government has been giving the green light to spend 1.8 billion CDs to finance its operations during the 2016 financial year. The House, however, stepped down approval for the appointment of the MP from Kwanta North, Deputy Minister of Local Government and Rural Development. A home fire safety campaign has been launched in Accra to reduce domestic fires across the country. Launching it, wife of the Vice President, Mrs. Matilda and Mr. Arthur, said fire safety is a shared responsibility and urged the public to partner the Ghana National Fire Service to ensure fire safety. And the Green Climate Fund of the UN has approved over $257 million for developing countries to implement the Paris Agreement on climate change. To this end, a training program has been held in Accra for institutions and civil society groups to acquire skills on writing good proposals to source the funds. And that ends the news with Abraham Donko in Accra.